Now the days of David drew nigh that he should die. Oh. One of my favorite characters, and I don't easily read verses like this. It'll be a long time. It'll probably be... Every time I go through a book, I almost think, this might be the last time we go through this book, you know what I mean? It's about 10 years, 12 years, if you teach through the whole Bible. That's the three services a week. Of course, the third one is Sunday night on the YouTube now, but still three teachings a week. So we see David again, a little bit in First Chronicles, so we can keep going right now. The days of David drew nigh that he should die, and he charged Solomon's son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be thou strong, therefore, and show thyself a man. He is probably 15 at this point. Show thyself a 15-year-old man. Well, it's after Bar Mitzvah, so he is a son of the law. He's accountable to God. He's a man in that culture. Still an awful thing to put on a 15-year-old. I don't know many 15-year-olds who are ready to, pass the, we want you to run the nation. No big deal, right? I go the way of the whole earth. Be thou strong, therefore, and show thyself a man. He's been brought up in the palace. What does he know about being a man? He hasn't been to battle like David has. And he hasn't been keeping sheep. He hasn't killed a bear and a lion and a giant at this point. So how are you going to show yourself a man? You're going to draw your sword and you're going to go after him, kill other men? No. And keep the charge of the Lord thy God, the manliest thing to do that I know of. To walk in his ways, to keep his statutes and his commandments and his judgments and his testimonies, as is written in the law of Moses, thou mayest prosper in all that thou doest, and whithersoever thou turnest thyself. The Bible's good for any venue in your life. Whithersoever you turn your hand, it's gonna come out right. What do you got to do? Just follow God's commandments. Easy peasy. That the Lord may continue his word which he spake concerning me, saying, if thy children take heed to their way to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, there shall not fail thee, said he, a man on the throne of Israel. Moreover, thou knowest also what Joab the son of Zeruiah did to me. And what did he do to him? Well, he killed his son Absalom, and he was part in that rebellion with Adonijah. And what he did to me and two captains of the host of Israel, unto Abner the son of Ner, and unto Amasa the son of Jether, whom he slew and shed the blood of war in peace, and put the blood of war upon his girdle that was upon his about his loins, and in the shoes that were on his feet. Do therefore according to thy wisdom, and let not his hoar head go down to the grave in peace. But show kindness unto the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and let them be of those that eat at thy table. For so they came to me when I fled because of Absalom thy brother. And behold, thou hast with thee Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite of Bahurim, which cursed me with a grievous curse on the day when I went to Mahanaim. But he came down to meet me at Jordan. I swear to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put thee to death with the sword. One, two things. I'm not going to put him to death, and the sword's going to be involved, okay? So his typical Jewish reckoning, okay, let's find a way out of this dilemma, right? Now therefore, hold him not guiltless, for thou art a wise man, knowest what thou oughtest to do unto him. But his hoarhead bring thou down to the grave with blood. So David slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. And the days that day, and good YouTube video on this. What's the name of that? Expedition Bible, David's tomb. It's worth looking at. And the days that David reigned over Israel were 40 years. 7 years reigned he in Hebron, 30 and 3 years reigned he in Jerusalem. So how old was he when he died? He said he reigned 40 years. How old was he when he took the throne? 30 plus 40 is 70. So he dies at 70. Then sat Solomon upon the throne of David his father, and his kingdom was established greatly. And Adonijah, the son of Haggith, oh my goodness, this guy just keeps popping up. He's like a bad penny, right? He came to Bathsheba, the son of Solomon. She said, comest thou peaceably? And he said, peaceably. And he said, moreover, I have somewhat to say unto thee. And she said, say on. He said, thou knowest that the kingdom was mine. No, it wasn't, you ridiculous, silly little man, you. No, it wasn't. You're a dreamer, and you're not... That's ridiculous. Thou knowest that the king was mine, that all Israel set their faces on me, that I should reign. None of that's true except in his own brain. Howbeit, the kingdom is turned about, and it became my brother's, for it was his from the Lord. Well, that's true. And if that's true, what's that ridiculous first part for? He's trying to get her to feel sorry for him. God bless you women, because you have such a wonderful heart. I mean, you really, really do. But sometimes guys will manipulate a woman's heart for their own purposes. That's what he's doing here. And now I ask, one petition of thee, deny me not. And she said unto him, say on. He said, speak, I pray thee, unto Solomon the king, for he will not say thee nay, that he give me Abishag the Shunammite to wife. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, don't judge too soon. Bathsheba said, well, I will speak for thee unto the king. Bathsheba therefore went unto King Solomon to speak unto him for Adonijah, and the king rose up to meet her, and bowed himself unto her, and sat down on his throne, and caused a seat to be set for the king's mother, and she sat on his right hand. Now, in Catholic theology, this is why you should pray through Mary to Christ, who Solomon is clearly a Christ type here, and you pray, you see, you don't go directly to the king, you go through, because you can get his mother to manipulate. True story. I know you're looking at me like incredulous, with a bit of strained credulity. No, this is taught often. Then she said, I desire one small petition of thee. I pray thee, say me not nay. Don't you like when your kid says, I'm going to ask you something, but don't say no. She's doing the same thing. But she's the mom, right? He's the one who's supposed to be asking his mommy, but don't tell me no. Ask on my mother, for I will not say thee nay. You see, Jesus is locked in when his mother asks something. That's why we should always pray through Mary. Right? This is how it goes. I stumbled on this. One guy was telling me this, and I said, and I'm always big on typology and stuff, and I thought, hey, wait a second. It was back a long, long time ago. I'll say that. I was probably 25 or something, okay? Eons. I think there were dinosaurs back roaming around back when I was 25. And she said, let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah thy brother to wife. King Solomon answered and said to his mother, and why dost thou ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him the kingdom also, for he is mine elder brother, even for him, and for Abiathar the priest, and for Joab the son of Zeruiah. Then King Solomon swear by the Lord, saying, go do so, God do so to me, and more also, if Adonijah hath not spoken this word against his own life. So let's think of that praying to Mary again. And this, by the way, cured me from that thought, from that, because I was like, wait a second, that just blew up in her face. And Adonijah's, he's not going to get, he thought he was going to wheedle a deal here, get mom involved. Because Solomon, right, set up a throne, bow to his mom. He's a mama's boy, like most of us are. We all love our mom, you know. And then what happens? Oh, yeah, he's going to die. Now, this is one of the reasons that I think that Abishag is the Shulamite of the Song of Solomon. This right here. He's not indifferent about this. Now, some, if you read theology, if you read commentary on this, some will say, well, that is, she belongs to David. Asking for her is like asking for David's harem. The next king that succeeds David would have his harem by rights. So this is like him making still a play for the kingdom. I don't think that's it at all. I think he just wants Abishag. What do we know about her? She's really beautiful according to Scripture. That's all we know. So Adonijah is smitten like Solomon is smitten. But Solomon's saying like, no, that's not going to happen. He's going to die. Because remember, he promised, if you show yourself a worthy man. And according to Solomon, he just stepped over the line, apparently. And at this point, whatever, he's not married to the Shunammite because he's not asking for another man's wife. And he wouldn't be doing that and asking her to get involved. Now therefore, as the Lord liveth, which hath established me and set me on the throne of David my father, and hath made me an house, as he promised, Adonijah shall be put to death this day. I don't think he's ambivalent about his feelings towards Abishag. And I think that's why she's called the Shulamite. I'm trying to think. Arnold Fruchtenbaum says that's Mrs. Solomon. It's the female version of Solomon. So that's her name as we understand it. But that's not her name. And we're never given her name. What's her name? Well, I think it's Abishag, but we can't really prove it, okay? So that's just something for you to think about, put in the back burner of your brain. Why is Solomon so exercised about this? Oh, you'd be exercised if somebody asked for your wife or your wife-to-be or someone you would think of. Yeah, if you were the king, you'd probably, you know, that guy would have a bad day. That's my thinking. That's all, you know. King Solomon sent by the hand of Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he fell upon him that he died. He's going to die this day? Now he's dead. And unto Abiathar the priest said the king, get thee to Anathoth, unto thine own fields, for thou art worthy of death. Why? His rebellion against David, against Solomon. But I will not at this time put thee to death, because thou bearest the ark of the Lord God before David my father, and because thou hast been afflicted in all wherein my father was afflicted. Okay, you've been through some stuff with my dad, and based on that, I'm going to let you live. So Solomon thrust out Abiathar from being priest unto the Lord. You think this is just vengeance? Wait a second. That he might fulfill the word of the Lord which he spoke concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. You remember that? It's way back in 1 Samuel chapter 2. He had two horrible sons, Hophni and Phinehas. Do you remember this? And they were sleeping with women when they brought sacrifices and all this stuff. And they would steal the sacrifices of the Lord so people didn't even want to make sacrifices anymore. They were dogs. And Eli didn't take care of business. So God said, well, I'm going to take care of business. And this is the end of God's business. Okay, it was 40-something years later. But here it is. So Solomon thrust out Abiathar from being priest unto the Lord, that he might fulfill the word of the Lord which he spake concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. Then tidings came to Joab. So Joab's hearing this. Okay, Solomon's cleaning house. This doesn't look good. Tidings came to Joab, for Joab had turned after Adonijah, though he turned not after Absalom, and Joab fled unto the tabernacle of the Lord and caught hold of the horns of the altar. He can't do that. Adonijah could, but that's for like a guiltless man. And it was told King Solomon that Joab was fled to the tabernacle of the Lord. Behold, he is by the altar. And Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, saying, go fall upon him. In other words, when he says go fall upon him, it means kill him. It's polite. And Benaiah came to the tabernacle of the Lord and said unto him, thus saith the king, come forth. And he said, nay, but I will die here. And Benaiah brought the king word again, saying, thus said Joab, and thus he answered me. And the king said upon him, do as he had said, and fall upon him and bury him, that thou mayest take away the innocent blood which Joab shed from me and from the house of my father. It all has to be avenged. This blood that hasn't been reconciled. And the Lord shall return his blood upon his own head, who fell upon two men more righteous and better than he, and slew them with the sword. My father David, not knowing thereof, to wit, Abner, the son of Ner, captain of the host of Israel, and Amasa, the son of Jether, captain of the host of Judah. Their blood shall therefore return upon the head of Joab and upon the head of his seed forever, but upon David and upon his seed and upon his house and upon his throne shall there be peace forever from the Lord. Every time something happens these days nationally that's vindicating our normalization and our return from crazy, I celebrate that we're going back to normalcy. We can't fly in the face of God forever. He's going to swat us. We can't say men can become women and women can become men. We can't do it. I don't care about political expediency. I care about God invented genders. And I'm not trying to run for office. I'm not trying to be political. I'm trying to be biblical. And so today it was decree, fiat, decree. Executive orders. I don't know when they came into being. They're horrible when they work against us, and they're wonderful when they work for us. It is against the law for men to play in women's sports. Yay! Praise you, Jesus. And we have to go back to things can't, we can't fly in the face of God. And when things are returning, I'm not trying to give you a political speech who you should vote for. I'm saying there's clear right and there's clear wrong. And when we call evil good and good evil, that's a bad, bad place to be. He's cleaning house. We have somebody else who's cleaning house somewhat, okay? It takes a while. We our house needs to be very clean, and it's not going to happen overnight. But anytime something happens good, you got to praise Jesus for that. I did. I do. So Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, went up and fell upon him and slew him, and he was buried in his own house in the wilderness. That's too bad. You know, you kind of like Joab sometimes. He does some good things. He says some good things. And you're thinking, he's a believer. He's kind of a rough guy, but again, I always say complex character, but you can't just kill people indiscriminately. I don't care if you're the head general in charge of, you can't do it. And now, he got his comeuppance. And the king put Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, in his room over the host. And Zadok the priest did the king put in the room of Abiathar. Now, if you read the end of the book of Ezekiel, the establishment of the, well, it's the kingdom. And it's the pot leading up to the kingdom. The priestly line is the Zadok line. And it's established right here. And the king sent and called for Shimei. You remember our boy Shimei, the cousin Bahurimite, right? And said unto him, build thee an house in Jerusalem and dwell there and go not forth thence anywhither. Don't leave Jerusalem. That's King James, so don't leave Jerusalem. For it shall be that in the day thou goest over and passest over the brook Kidron, that's the line of demarcation, thou shalt know for certain that thou shalt surely die, thy blood shall be upon thine own head. Shimei said unto the king, the saying is good as my lord the king hath said, so will thy servant do. And Shimei dwelt in Jerusalem many days. You got it, king. Now, I would make sure that I did not leave Jerusalem, okay? We know this is a cleaning house type of king. You're in Jerusalem. You're groovy. You can't do anything to you. He just promised him that he wouldn't. Don't go over the boundaries. If you do, you're all done. Came to pass at the end of 3 years that two of the servants of Shimei ran away unto Achish, the son of Maacah, king of Gath. And they told Shimei, saying, behold, thy servants be in Gath. Well, send more servants after them, dummy. Shimei rose and saddled his ass and went to Gath to Achish to seek his servants. And Shimei went and brought his servants from Gath. So he's got his servants back, but he doesn't have his life back. You know, some people do some things that are so abysmally dumb, you got to just, okay, now you're going to get killed. You kind of brought that on yourself. And it was told Solomon, Shimei had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and was come again. The king sent and called to Shimei, and Shimei is saying, I'm having a bad day. And he said unto him, did I not make thee to swear by the Lord and protested unto thee, saying, know for certain on the day thou goest out and walkest abroad anywhither that thou shalt surely die, and thou saidst to me, the word that I have heard is good. Why then hast thou not kept the oath of the Lord and the commandment that I have charged thee with? The king said moreover to Shimei, thou knowest all the wickedness which thine heart is privy to that thou didst to David my father. Therefore the Lord shall return thy wickedness upon thine own head. King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before the Lord forever. So the king commanded, who else? Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, which went out and fell upon him that he died. And the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Okay, chapter 2, cleaning house chapter. Chapter 3, Solomon made affinity with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. There's nothing really wrong with that, per se. And took Pharaoh's daughter. Oh. Saul, you're going in the wrong direction, buddy. And brought her into the city of David until he had made an end of building his own house and the house of the Lord and the wall of Jerusalem round about. Only the people sacrificed in high places. Now, it's not too bad here. Later on, we're going to hear this recurring theme through both books of the Kings. And people sacrificed in the high places. But here, because there was no house built under the name of the Lord until those days. This is pre-temple. There is a tabernacle, but there's not a temple. And Solomon loved the Lord. Now see, so when he takes Pharaoh's daughter, it's not because he hates God. He's not doing, it's a political alliance. It was done in those days. It was done in Europe less than 100 years ago. You know, this Russian czar's daughter is married to this king of England or France or whatever. They did this pretty regularly. But here, Solomon loves the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father. Only he sacrificed and burned incense in high place. And the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. 1,000 burnt offerings did Solomon offer upon the altar. Wow. What's a burnt offering? Does anyone know? One word. It's a sacrifice, yeah? What kind? Consecration. It's not a sin offering. It's the whole thing is consumed, and the idea is, Lord, I'm wholly yours. Now, you could burn yourself up in a fire, but then you really can't serve God after that. So you burn up the animal instead. The whole thing is in smoke to the Lord, and the idea is you're offering yourself. Here I am, Lord, not holding anything back, okay? I am all in. This is what? Now, he did that 1,000 times over, okay? Now, if you're having peace offerings and fellowship offerings, you get a part, and the people you're with get a part, the priest gets a part. But in this is the word again, consecration. God gets a part, and you get nothing. The priests get nothing. Everybody else gets nothing. God gets it all. Right? Consecration. He offered 1,000 offerings that Solomon offered upon that altar. In Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask what I shall give thee. Now, at this point, Solomon's the ripe old age of 18, probably, according to Josephus. Ask what I shall give thee. Okay, we got an 18-year-old. You gave him a blank check, keys to the kingdom. Here you go. Whatever you want. Now, I don't know many 18-year-olds who I'm ready to hand over like that much. But God is God, and God will do what God says. It's not a number. It never was. You know, can an 18-year-old be totally devoted to the Lord? Or an 8-year-old? Or an 88-year-old, or somebody who doesn't have any eights in their age at all. Can it, whatever your age, you can, you know what I mean? It's, Can this be that I'm totally devoted to you, Lord? King Solomon saying. And God said, what do you want me to give to you? Because you got such a good heart, it's so pure right now, you're so devoted to me, I'm not even worried about what you're going to fill in this blank check with. Solomon says, thou hast showed unto thy servant David my father great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee, and thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. He rehearsed all that God has done for David. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father. But I'm a little child. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm in way over my skis, God. I mean, look at this. I know not how to go out or come in. I don't know how to lead troops in battle or return from battle. I don't know what I'm doing. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. He's not doing a census, right? That was a bad thing. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may be discern between good and bad. Who is able to judge this thy so great a people? And the speech pleased the Lord. Would it please you? I guess say yes. It pleased the Lord. Solomon asked this thing. God said unto him, because thou hast asked this thing, and hast not asked for thyself life, long life, neither hast thou asked riches for thyself, nor hast thou asked a life of thine enemies, but how that you've asked for understanding to discern judgment. And probably those are the things that God gets hit up for the most, right? I want a long life, I want riches, I want, oh yeah, kill this guy, he's standing on my last nerve. Behold, I have done according to thy words. Lord, I have given thee a wise and understanding heart. You asked for it, you got it. Hey, James tells us if any man lacks wisdom, right? Very often, I don't know what I need to do in a certain situation. I don't think I lack wisdom. I'm an idiot. I can't even dress myself. I don't think that, but I think, what about this situation, Lord? I really want to do the right thing, and I'm not exactly sure what the right thing is in this situation. Would you ask him? He gives to you liberally, and he won't upbraid. Oh, you want to know the right thing to do? Well, I want you to know the right thing to do, God says. Don't you think that's so godlike? He's your loving Heavenly Father. Why would he keep you in the dark? I've done according to your words. Lord, I have given thee a wise and understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. Smart guy. And I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the king like unto thee all thy days. You remember in his days, like silver was like rocks. You didn't bother picking it up when you dropped some, right? It's so wealthy, so opulent. And if thou wilt walk in my days to keep my statutes and my commandments as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days. And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And he came to Jerusalem and stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and offered up burnt offerings and offered peace offerings and made a feast to all his servants. Did God give him a wise heart, or is it just a dream? No. It was a dream, but it was a significant dream in which God actually visited him, I think, and actually spoke to him and gave him what. And the proof of that is the rest of the chapter. We know the story. Then came two women that were harlots, son of the king, and stood before him. The one woman said, O my Lord, I and this woman dwell in one house, and I was delivered of a child with her in the house. And it came to pass the third day after I was delivered that this woman was delivered also, and we were together. There was no stranger with us in the house, save we two in the house. Okay? We have birth of children 3 days apart. And this woman's child died in the night because she overlaid it. Okay, she slept on the child. That's why we have cribs. And she arose at midnight and took my son from beside me while thy handmaid slept and laid it in her bosom and laid her dead child in my bosom. When I arose in the morning to give my child suck, behold, it was dead. And when I considered it in the morning, behold, it was not my son, which I did bear. And the other woman said, Nay, but the living is my son, the dead is thy son. And this said, No, but the dead is thy son, and the living is thy son. Thus they spake before the king. Wow, what a conundrum. Now, I don't know if you'd know how to figure this out. Now we do because we read the story. And it's a very famous story. But I mean, you got to put yourself in this King Solomon spot. I mean, okay, let's do some DNA testing. They don't even know DNA, all right? They don't know forensics, or they don't have, they can't test blood types. They can't, all they have is the testimony of two women both saying the child's mine. The king said, the one saith, this is my son that liveth, and the son, and thy son is the dead. And the other say, nay, but my son is the dead. Thy son is the dead, my son is the living. The king said, bring me a sword. And they brought a sword before the king. And the king said, divide the living child in two and give half to the one, half to the other. Good. Easily solved, right? You get half. We're all good, right? Now this is delightfully insightful. Would you have thought it up yourself? I dare say I wouldn't have, because I don't think of children as half people usually, you know, and here, give everybody half, now everybody's half happy. And by the way, if half my wealth went to somebody who claimed it was all theirs and they divvied it up, I'd still lose half of everything. Half of anything you have, someone says, that's mine. And the judge says, well, I can't determine, so you get half, you get half. Well, the person who had it loses half. And of course, we don't have half kids running around, because when they're half, they don't run, right? Then spake the woman whose living child was unto the king, and her bowels yearned upon her son. She said, oh, my lord, give her the living child, and no way slay it. But the other said, let it be neither mine nor thine, but divide it. Now, they just outed themselves, okay? You think the first woman who said, oh, no, don't kill, don't, no, 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 no. The other one doesn't have to say anything, all right? And they said the same thing, he'd still be in the same predicament. But she outed herself, yeah, cut it in half. The people who didn't give birth to a thing don't mind cutting the thing in half. I'm just telling you, it could be a child, it could be anything. A movement, a church, an organization. If you didn't birth it, if you didn't see it through, if you didn't work, then it's like, yeah, half, yeah, we don't, none, who cares, right? The king answered and said, yeah, give the living child, and in no wise slay it, she is the mother thereof. At this point, anyone in the whole room could have figured it out, but he's the one who said, give me a sword, let's get this thing going. And all Israel heard of the judgment, which the king had judged, and they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to do judgment. We know Solomon he messes up. You remember? He marries a lot of women, they turn their heart from God. So if God says to you in a dream, blank check, say, I want to be a man, I want to be a woman after your own heart. Wisdom is great. Is it enough? Okay. I think it's chapter 19 of 2 Samuel. And Mephibosheth. Verse 25, 2 Samuel 19. It came to pass when he was come to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said unto him, verse 24, Mephibosheth the son of Saul came down to meet the king. He neither dressed his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he came again in peace. It came to pass when he was come to Jerusalem to meet the king, the king said unto him, wherefore went thou not with me, Mephibosheth? David's hurt here. And Mephibosheth answered, and he said, my lord, O king, my servant deceived me, for thy servant said, I will saddle me an ass, and I will ride thereon, and go to the king, because thy servant is lame, and he hath slandered thy servant unto my lord the king. For my lord the king is an angel of God. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes. For all my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king, yet didst thou set thy servant among them that did eat at thine own table. What right therefore have I yet to cry any more unto the king? And the king said to him, why speak, are we still talking about this? Why speakest any more of thy matters? I have said, thou and Ziba divide the land. Ziba's the one who lied about him. But David doesn't know that. So he says, okay, you take half, Ziba can take the other half. Mephibosheth said unto the king, yea, let him take all, for as much as my lord the king has come again in peace unto his own house. He can have it all. I don't care. David, it's never been about wealth or servants or lands or I got you back in my life. That's the only thing that matters to me. Did Mephibosheth just say who was the real and who was the fake? Does David know it? Does the young boy in David's entourage named Solomon, was he privy to all this? Get me a sword. Let's divide this thing right up. I'm thinking Solomon saw this right here. Solomon's wisdom, he got it from the Lord. But some of it was David was a wise man. What's wisdom at the end of the day? Intellect? Because some of us have intellect, some of us don't. Some have more than others, okay? I've known some simple people who are really, really great in their faith. And I have known some people who are intellectual giants who are great in their faith. I don't think faith and intellect are the same thing. I don't think wisdom is, you're a real smart guy, you got all A's in school, you did great. If you did that, tremendous. God gave you the ability to put the books, facts in here and then puke it back up on the test when they ask the appropriate questions, you fill in the right answers and you got all A's and hooray for you. That's great. And your ability to do that is a reflection on the fact that God's very good. Amen. I don't think any of that has to do with wisdom. I think wisdom is taking this book, not a textbook, and applying it to your life. Taking the situations and discerning and being able to take the right verses at the right time, given to the right circumstances, and being able to live in a way that you bring the Bible to bear on the circumstances of your life, and you do the biblical thing or the wise thing. That's what I think wisdom is. Beyond that, there may be intellectual parts of it involved. I don't think you got to study. You still got to, be an approved workman and not ashamed, right? Study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that needs not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. You still got to do that. You still got to apply yourself. You still got to learn. You still got to study. You still got to, like any other book, but being able to take what you've learned and apply it to your life. Marriage. What does the Bible say about marriage? Oh, lots of things. Finances. What does the Bible say about finances? Lots and lots of stuff. What does the Bible say about whatever you need to live the life? Hasn't God given us everything pertaining to life and godliness? And we're wise and discerning when we take this and we apply it to the situation in such a way. This way, wherever we turn our hand, whatever venue, wherever we find ourselves, we know the right thing to say and we know the thing. And there's usually a verse. There's usually something that suggests itself. To me, you say, well, Adam, you've been studying for a long time. Yeah, I got this early on. I think, I don't know if it's me. I don't know if it's a gift. I don't know if it's something that everyone has. But especially when I'm about to do something wrong, when this temptation place comes, and I'm really mad at somebody, I want to vent, and a soft answer turns away wrath. Ooh, I don't want to know that verse right now. But you have to take what the Bible says, and you have to apply it to the situation. And then you say, when you should have blown up, and everyone's expecting you to, you say, yep, all right, you're right, that's my fault. You're right, I'll do better. I'm sorry about that. And all of a sudden, this situation that was right in a boiling, right in a place where it was going to blow up and go every which way, now it's suddenly diffused and everyone's happy and people look at you and say, wow, that's amazing. Well, they're not going to say it, but they're going to notice it. There's going to come a day when you're such a standard bearer for God, and this is going to, you're getting a little bit of Sunday stuff here, right? That hasn't happened yet. There's going to come a day when, someone's going to get a bad report from the doctor, or their going, their marriage is going south, or something's going to happen. They're going to say, you know, I noticed you have, they may probably won't say that, but they'll say, you know, will you pray for me? Or they're going to come and get counsel from you, and you're going to have the opportunity to speak because you did the Bible thing. You did the wise thing. And people, wisdom is such a, we don't see it. We see crazy happening. We see insane going on around us, right? We see fluid genders going on around us. So when somebody stands up and says, no, no, this is what the Word of God has to say, and brings wisdom to bear on a situation, it's so, breath of fresh air. People remember that, where they got that, when it's time, when they need some in their lives. I've talked with people who told me there was no God and they were certain there wasn't. And then they wanted me to pray for their mom who just got stage 4 pancreatic cancer or something like that. And I always am way too much of a gentleman to say, pray? To who? The God you don't believe in? I would never do that. I would never do that. But I would think it. But here's the thing. You have the opportunity now. And by the way, pray right then out loud. That would be the best thing. Just saying. Okay, so that's it for tonight. And so next time we'll be in 1 Kings chapter 4, looking more at the reign of Solomon.